Insperity presents the Small Business Advocate Show with Jim Blasingame. This is a copyrighted production of Small Business Network, Inc. All rights reserved.
Talkers Magazine calls Jim Blasingame one of the best talk show hosts in the industry.
Now remember, I do my best work when I'm being worshipped as a god.
He's Jim Blasingame, the Small Business Advocate.
Welcome back. It's 34 after the hour. Thanks very much for hanging around with us today. If you just tuned in, welcome aboard. If you've been listening already, we thank you for that. That means you're a highly intelligent individual. And if you just tuned in, that means you got all that to look forward to. Karen Harnett is one of the reasons why we get really smart when we do this show around here, because she's one of the really smart folks who is a member of our Brain Trust. She's been a member a long time. She's executive director of the NFIB's Legal Foundation, the National Federation of Independent Businesses, an organization that I've been a member of now for a long time, and as you know, recommend to you. And Karen's here to talk to us about a very important topic. Karen, welcome back to the show.
Thanks so much, Jim. It's great to be back.
It's good to have you back. I've missed you.
I know. I've missed you, too. And I thank you for addressing this very important issue that really impacts a lot of small business owners everywhere across the nation.
Well, it's my pleasure. As you know, I was talking about this. I was following it. I actually... And folks, we're talking about the eminent domain issue that came before the Supreme Court last summer. And you know, Karen, this is such an important topic that when I found out that they were even discussing it, they were considering it, I started tracking this issue. And so the moment the case came down, the decision came down, I wrote an article about it, started talking about it on the show. And I remember, the article I wrote was like the middle of July. It was published in newspapers and on my own distribution. And it was like 3 months before the mainstream media got involved in this. They were behind the curve, weren't they?
They were. And, you know, what we're talking about, of course, is the Kelo decision that came down this summer from the Supreme Court. Kelo v.
New London, London, Connecticut.
And the Supreme Court basically said in that case that it was all right for a city to basically help one private developer by giving them the land of private property owners. So some homeowners had their land and their homes essentially taken to be given to a developer that was making new waterfront properties, businesses, and condos.
115 properties altogether.
Correct. And so that really served as a wake-up call, I think, to the nation as a whole. And, you know, unlike yourself, who had been following this and been acutely aware of the problems that such situations cause, because this really is a little guy versus big guy problem, you know, the Kelo decision really outraged a lot of folks, and there's really been a national effort now to try to pare it down. And to that end, you know, last week in the Supreme Court of Ohio, they heard what really has been, I guess, the biggest case since Kelo that's like it, where a private developer had gone to some homeowners and business owners and said, "Hey, I want your land," and they didn't, you know, say they didn't want to sell, and so he went to the city and said, "Why don't you do a study and see if this area could be deemed blighted?" Mm-hmm. And so the city did a study, and even in the study, they admitted that not one of the homes or the businesses in the affected area was dilapidated or delinquent in taxes, yet they went ahead anyway and decided to label the properties blighted and inappropriately exercise their eminent domain power so that they could take the properties over and this developer could now make some condos and some new office buildings.
Part of the idea behind that would be that it would increase the tax revenue for the municipality.
That is exactly right. And, you know, that's one of our biggest issues with this particular case. You know, if we're going to start saying that blight includes the definition of blight includes a comparison of the relative economic benefit to be brought by the planned redevelopment, you know, compared to the tax revenue of a high-rise office building, mm-hmm. almost every business or small business or home is going to be considered blighted, and well, they're going to be in danger or threatened by a city, you know, to be taken away.
Right.
And that's just not right.
Well, absolutely. And Justice O'Connor, who was one of the four dissenters in this, wrote, this was her, the language of her her dissent. Well, actually, we're coming up on a break, and so I'm going to read Justice O'Connor's dissent, which I think you'll find very interesting, small business owners. And when we come back, we're going to talk about the actual language in the Constitution that does allow for eminent domain, but what it means and how one word gets changed to another word, and it becomes different, and it becomes basically the Kelo v. New London case. And all of this, folks, could impact you if you're a business owner and you own real estate or a home. It could impact you if we don't get this straightened out. 20 Till, we'll be right back. Stay with us. We're back. It's 17 Till. I'm Jim Blassingame, the Small Business Advocate. And Karen Harnett is our guest, ladies and gentlemen. She's Executive Director of the NFIB's Legal Foundation. And she's now been a member of our Brain Trust for over 3.5 years since she first came with the NFIB. And we're talking about the eminent domain case that came before the Supreme Court this summer, Kelo versus New London. And are you there, Karen? We lose Karen? All right, Roger, I'll get her back. Let me explain to you while we're getting her back what the Constitution says. It's in the Fifth Amendment, ladies and gentlemen, and the Fifth Amendment is a very short but a very robust passage, and it's chock full of protections for citizens. And you know, one of the things you know about the Fifth Amendment is the ability not to incriminate yourself, right? You can take, if you're being interviewed, if you're testifying before in court or anything like that, and you don't want to answer a question, you can take the Fifth, right? You can take the Fifth on grounds that would intend to incriminate you. That's all part of the Fifth Amendment. What you might not know is that the inside that little amendment, which is not very big, there's also something called the Takings Clause. The Takings Clause says simply this: nor shall private property be taken for public use without just compensation. And that's the biggie. That's the big paragraph or the big sentence there. And the important word there is public. It's not public. The important word is use. And what's happened is that word use is being converted to benefit. Nor shall private property be taken for public benefit. The people like New London, Connecticut, and the Ohio company Karen mentioned earlier, and all that, those people want... they want to change basically the meaning of the Takings Clause from public use to public benefit. And for example, you've heard of eminent domain. You've heard of the right of eminent domain and all of that. And so you know that when a railroad wanted to go through your land, or if they're building a road through your property, the government, the state, or I guess the city is building a bridge or a road or a railroad or whatever, and it's for public use, they could take that from you. They have to pay you compensation for that. It's for public use, and you have to be compensated. You can take them to court, and you can make sure that they pay you a fair amount if you can't stop them from taking it, which the Takings Clause of the Fifth Amendment actually allows for. But, and Karen's back with us. Karen, I was just describing how the Takings Clause works in the Constitution. And, of course, folks, Karen's an attorney. But, Karen, I was saying that what's happened is, it seems to me, that a lot of these municipalities have been trying to convert for public use into being defined as public benefit.
That is exactly right.
That's the crux of the tension, isn't it?
That really is, and that's in that analysis. Like I was saying before, that you know the small business owner is not going to win on a lot of instances, and as you were just mentioning, you know, the government does need to compensate property owners when they take their property, but for small business owners, it's not that easy to just pick up and relocate. Mm-hmm. You know, their success and their customer base is often enriched in their community, and their employees are part of that community. The money they receive for their property cannot just buy a new business. So when small business owners become victims of eminent domain abuse, not only do they lose their property, but often they lose their business.
Now, there was a 5-4 decision, and I promise you I would read Justice O'Connor's opinion. She sided with Rehnquist, Scalia, and Thomas, those four, and she wrote this for the dissenting minority. Today, the court abandons this long-held public limitation on government power. Under the banner of economic development, all private property is now vulnerable to being taken and transferred to another private owner. Nothing is to prevent the state from replacing any Motel 6 with a Ritz-Carlton, any home with a shopping mall, or any farm with a factory. That's Justice Sandra Day O'Connor writing for the dissent, for the minority. The other group said, for more than a century, or our public use jurisprudence was widely eschewed, has widely eschewed rigid formulas in favor of broad latitude in determining what public needs justify the use of the takings power. Two totally different attitudes, isn't it, Karen?
Yes, no, that is exactly right. And what's so scary is, like in this case I mentioned earlier that's going on right now in Ohio, the appeals court approved the city, you know, taking these properties and calling them blighted, and said that the only requirement that a city had to meet before taking property is to produce a record demonstrating that a sound reasoning process had occurred. Well, that's a very subjective standard that, you know, you can dress anything up and say that you've engaged in sound reasoning. And that's why when I go around the country, and I'm sure when you talk to folks too, Jim, you know, small business owners are scared. They're like, yep, how do I know that my business is going to be here 5 years from now without the government taking it away from me?
Well, and of course, the Supreme Court didn't actually say, if I'm not mistaken, Karen, correct me if I'm wrong here, the Supreme Court didn't actually say that New London, in this case, was right. They basically just kicked it back to the states, didn't they?
Right, they did.
And said the states can make that choice, which was an important thing because now many of the states are making that choice. They are defining what takings means, aren't they?
Yes, though, you know, the definition of what's blighted can still lead to problems. You need
well, the
to make
reason,
sure that that's tied.
The reason why Karen and I are talking about this, folks, because in your state, if you're concerned about this, you need to get involved with your state politicians, your state delegation and leaders, and tell them how you feel about this. And we're going to talk about this some more right after these messages and talk about what some states around the country have already done. Stay with us. 10 till. You're in an awful We're back at 7 till. I'm Jim Blassingame, the Small Business Advocate, and Karen Harnett is our guest. She's Executive Director of the NFIB's Legal Foundation. And Karen, give us your website, please.
Yes, it's nfib.com/legal or nfiblegal.com.
All right. And so, folks, check that out. I encourage you, of course, to check out what the NFIB offers. They do a great job of representing you and me in Washington and all 50 of the state houses to make sure that the kinds of things that we're talking about don't hurt you and me. If possible, they can help to solve some of these problems like the eminent domain cases that are going on right now. And Karen, one of the things we need to make sure we do is point out that you know, let's not be naive about this. The takings clause has been abused now for, as you said to me off air, 130 years. I was actually involved in a case back in the 70s. I was a juror in a case where the private property owner was suing for a fair price. And we actually gave them more than the city was going to offer them, and that was a clearly an example. When I now know what happened to that property, this was a mini kilo case.
Right.
Because it was taken from a small business. They literally took property, and of course our decision wasn't whether they could do it or not. We were just trying to make sure they got the right amount of money, and so we did that. But this was taken from a small business and given to one small business, and basically then later sold to another small business, a bigger small business.
Right. And that's, as you pointed out, that has been going on for quite some time.
A lot of the states have been reacting to this Kelo case, and a lot of the states are actually doing some things about this, aren't they? Tell us what's going on.
Yes. There's been a lot of activity post-Kelo, and three states off the bat came out and basically addressed it through legislation, Alabama, Delaware, and Texas. And as many as 18 states introduced legislation setting limits on the government power to exercise eminent domain in 2005, and 14 more have publicly said that they're going to look at legislation during the 2006 session.
What are these states doing? Are they saying, well, you know, we're going to maybe have a better definition of what takings means here? We're not going to. How are they structuring the language?
I am not as much of an expert in this, but my understanding is that sometimes they're just saying that they're not going to allow for transfers like that happened in Kelo of private property from one private property owner to another. In other instances, they're working on definitions of what is blighted for purposes of where the government can exercise its eminent domain power.
Mm-hmm. Well, this is what needs to happen, and the good news is, if anything, the good news is that the Supreme Court did kick it back to the states. I mean, they didn't actually rule in favor of Kelo; they just didn't rule against Kelo. I mean, they didn't rule in favor of New London; they just didn't rule against Kelo by letting the states decide what they want to do. The interesting thing to me will be to see what the state of Connecticut does in this case.
Yes, it will be interesting because I think they've even had some demonstrations and things since that Kelo decision was announced.
Tell us about some of the other cases. We've got about a minute and a half. What are some of the other cases that you're working on?
Well, we're focusing on this Ohio case, and then with regards to eminent domain, and then we also have a private property rights case that the Supreme Court's going to be hearing this in the next month with regards to when the Army Corps of Engineers, a federal agency, can go on your property and essentially require you to go through hundreds of days of permitting applications, as well as spending tens of thousands of dollars to try to get a permit just so you can build on your own land.
Hmm.
And so that's an important case because it's another states' rights case, if you will.
Right.
And the states really should be able to be the first people that you as a property owner go to and not the government. They shouldn't have control over all land everywhere, and that's
folks,
what we're arguing.
Folks, sometimes people, Karen, will ask me, why should I join an organization like the NFIB? Why should I join my Chamber of Commerce? Why should I join my trade group? It's because they have people like Karen who are thinking about you and what you go through and who are skilled and educated, and it's their job to protect you. And Karen, for all you do for small business owners, not only in Washington, but all across the country, we thank you.
Thank you, Jim. We really appreciate all of your work in bringing small business issues to the forefront.
Yeah, thank you, Karen. It's always a pleasure. And I'll probably see you, I'll probably be in Washington real soon, and we'll come by and say hi.
That sounds great.
Thanks, Karen. See you next time. Karen Harned, ladies and gentlemen, with the NFIB's Legal Foundation. Got to go for this hour. Before I do, I want to thank my heroes, small business owners. This is Jim Blasingame. I'll see you later.
Insperity presents the Small Business Advocate Show with Jim Blasingame. This is a copyrighted production of Small Business Network, Inc., intended for the private use of our audience. Except as otherwise provided by copyright law, all other copying, redistribution, or publication without prior written consent is prohibited. All rights reserved.